This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. Allergies getting to you? Well, there's evidence that increasing levels of carbon dioxide in the air may be making some pollen-related allergies worse. Global warming may also be contributing to an increase in mosquitoes and mosquito-borne diseases and the growth of poison ivy. Here to explain the connection is Dr. Paul Epstein, Associate Director of the Center for Health and the Global Environment at Harvard Medical School. The center's goal is to promote a wider understanding of the health consequences of global environmental change. Epstein is a physician who has specialized in tropical diseases and public health. Let's start with the connection between climate change and worsening allergies to ragweed and pollen.
This is something that in the 1990s we did not imagine. We thought carbon dioxide, okay, one of the side effects is it could increase the forests and agriculture and green the earth. In fact, many of the skeptics about climate change touted carbon dioxide from burning fossil fuels as something that would boost photosynthesis and brighten up the earth and generate more nutrition. What we found is that the weedy species are responding disproportionately. The opportunists, just as in the animal kingdom, we see some of the mosquitoes and the bugs and rodents responding, we see opportunistic species in the plant world, like poison ivy, responding to carbon dioxide, making more of itself, growing, and also making more toxic chemical within it that's more allergenic. We did experiments with carbon dioxide and ragweed here at Harvard, and they were repeated by the U.S. Department of Agriculture. We doubled CO2, two times CO2, and what we found was that the ragweed went up about 10%, but the pollen went up 60%. We're seeing ivy and weeds and plants that are opportunistic seize on this disturbance of more CO2, make more of themselves, and make more toxicity. And this is something that is happening in the plants, it's happening in the animals, it's happening in the oceans with more algae and jellyfish. And these are the ones that are seizing on the multiple stresses that the environment is undergoing because of human activities, be it habitat change or extra chemicals or climate change itself.
So if you follow the rise in CO2 levels in the air, do you also see a rise in pollen that correlates with it, like in the last 10 or 20 years?
Yeah, we have data for the last 15 years or so, and people are seeing this as they brush off their cars or see it on their lakes. We're seeing the seeds and pollen. We're seeing it, but in fact, we're seeing very unusually high counts. And some of this is the carbon dioxide. What's interesting is that there are synergies. So the carbon dioxide is affecting plants, but we're also seeing early flowering of plants. And in Washington and New York and up here in Boston, we had flowering of plants in January. And I think actually that was one of the turning points in awareness about really how disturbed the seasons were and our weather was. Another one being, of course, before that, Katrina. But at any rate, we're seeing early flowering of plants. We're seeing synergies among the diesel particles that come out of trucks and buses. So very high rates of asthma along bus and truck routes in Harlem and in Roxbury and so on. Turns out diesel particles are a good delivery system for these pollen and spores.
How can that be? What do they do to deliver it?
They deliver it deep into the lung sacs, and they actually irritate, they have nitrate in them, so they irritate the immune cells, so they increase the allergic reaction.
Okay. The particles from the diesel fuel get inhaled and the allergens attach themselves to those particles?
That's right. We've known that diesel particles themselves affect the lungs and can irritate them and cause allergic symptoms. Now it looks as if there's this They glob on to these aeroallergens and help deliver them and sensitize the lungs to their impacts.
One of the things doctors have been investigating is why are we seeing such increases in the rates of people who have asthma? Do you think there's a connection between global warming and asthma?
Well, I believe there is, and there are several ways in which these various components are working. You've got the aeroallergens just from CO2. You've got diesel particles from burning fossil fuels as well. Then you have the change in the seasons. So climate change is affecting the seasons, and we're seeing early arrival of asthma and allergy season. Then there's another issue, which is ozone, the ugly ozone, the ground-level photochemical smog. And that's a reaction between tailpipe emissions that sped up with warming. So we're seeing warming counteract some of the attempts to reduce ozone. Then there's another one that's really hit us by surprise. We're seeing dust storms come off of Africa from where the deserts are forming that are the size of the continental U.S. And the desertification is due to overgreasing, but also to the warm sea surface temperatures that you've heard so much about. So we're seeing climate affect Africa. It's affecting actually China in ways that's sending dust storms to the West Coast. And in the Caribbean,
with the West Coast of America?
West Coast of America.
So the dust from the dust storms travel that far?
They do. They do. And they in terms of the Atlantic, they are seeming to be swept across along the same pathway of warm, salty sea surface water that's sweeping these hurricanes like Katrina and Rita and so on, is also accelerating the pathway of these dust storms. So they're reaching Barbados and Trinidad and also Florida, kids in Miami. And in these islands, asthma was unheard of. It was less than 1%, and that's why those of us from the north that could afford to would go there for clean air and so on. What we're seeing now is 25% of the kids have asthma on islands like Trinidad, studied by a woman pediatrician there. And they peak during these dust storms. The dust storms also introduce organisms that infect the coral in the Caribbean, the fan coral. So here's another dimension of climate and global change that's affecting our air quality. So we've got the carbon dioxide itself from burning fossil fuels. We've got the particles from fossil fuels. We've got the climate changing from fossil fuels. We've got the ozone from fossil fuels. And now the aggregate of climate change that's been created by this blanket of carbon dioxide and other heat-trapping gases is contributing to the various components of bringing on seasonal change, as well as the photochemical smog.
You know, you mentioned these dust storms from mm-hmm. Africa being swept across the ocean and coming to the coast of the United States. Who's actually tracking where that dust is coming from?
These are tracked by NASA, our space agency. So we see them in the satellites, and where they're also being tracked now is in the deep oceans, where we see fan coral being infected by fungi that are soil fungi from Africa, and we've traced them with DNA and so on. So it's very clear that this is where they're from, and we're seeing, in terms of the clinical picture, the epidemiology, that they peak with the asthma peaks during these dust storms. So the whole connection with disease, as well as the diseases of coral, is a clear one, and we see it from space first off.
My guest is Dr. Paul Epstein, Associate Director of the Center for Health and Global Environment at Harvard Medical School. We'll talk more after a break. This is Fresh Air. If you're just joining us, my guest is Dr. Paul Epstein. He's Associate Director of the Center for Health and the Global Environment at Harvard Medical School. You know, before we get deeper into some of the health problems that you think are being caused by global warming, let me just ask you a basic question. Why are you so convinced that we're actually experiencing global warming?
The oceans have warmed much more than the atmosphere. It turns out that over the past century, the oceans have warmed 22 times more than the atmosphere. And the oceans, as Andy Revkin called them, are the heat bank. They are storing the heat, and that is what is changing the water cycle. The oceans are warming, ice is melting, water vapor is rising. This is what's affecting our ecological systems and our health more than the warming itself.
More than the warming of the atmosphere.
Well, it is the warming of the deep oceans that is what generates the not just one storm, but the sequences of storms that and then lead to clusters of outbreaks of disease. It's the warming of the ocean that is helping to melt the ice at rates not conceived of just 5 years ago. They're accelerating and going twice as fast as they were some of the outlet glaciers in Greenland. This is what has us all alarmed, is the pace, the magnitude, the rate of change, the volatility and variability of weather, and the key is the heat that's accumulated in the deep ocean, which we missed. We missed when we looked just with satellites, and it wasn't until the science of the late 90s revealed with submarine data, et cetera, what was happening in the deep oceans. That's where the heat is.
I've spoken to scientists and science journalists who are confident that we're experiencing global warming, but they say that if you look at the pattern of events around the world, you could say this pattern is an example of the consequences of global warming, but you can't look at any one hurricane or any one event and say with certainty whether that one event is directly a consequence of global warming. Do you feel that you can look at the health issues that we've been talking about, like, you know, the increase in pollen levels, the increase in the number of people who are suffering with asthma? Can you look at any of those one things and say, this is definitely a consequence of global warming?
Well, I think in terms of asthma, we've described a number of ways that I do believe that climate change and the fossil fuel emissions are contributing to this disease. If one looks in the mountains of Africa, Latin America, and Asia at what's happening with malaria and dengue fever, we're changing to another type of disease, but there's a clear signal because there, just where the glaciers are retreating, where plant communities are migrating up, where the permanently frozen ground, the permafrost is receding, we're seeing mosquitoes circulate at high altitudes. And this means malaria is circulating in Nairobi. Dengue fever is up in the mountains of the Andes, etc. So it's in the mountains that we can see the clear signal that warming is affecting the range of infectious diseases.
Are insects particularly sensitive to climate change?
Insects are very sensitive to climate change. We see this in the when we do fossil records. They move faster than grasses and shrubs and trees and bears that are considered the paleothermometers, as they're called, that respond to changes in temperature. We see beetles moving much faster. We see this in terms of insects that are affecting forests, and they are moving from Arizona up to Alaska, overwintering. Some of these beetles are overwintering, moving to higher altitudes, moving to higher latitudes, and even sneaking in extra generations a year, just as the trees become weakened from drought, because it's the rosin in the trees that drowns out the beetles as they try to bore through the bark. Now, I'm telling you more than you want to know, but the point is that insect and plant life is just as important as the battle between insects and humans. And in fact, millions of years ago, it was that battle between insects and plants that resulted in the fossil fuel that we burn today. And it's a battle that is going to play out in terms of agriculture, in terms of forestry, and so on, in ways that may be more important than just malaria and human disease.
You've done field work over the years in developing countries. Do you feel like in your field work you ever directly observed epidemics or increases in illnesses that were correlated to global warming?
Well, in the 1990s, the huge storms were hitting Honduras, Hurricane Mitch, Mozambique, was having floods. Venezuela, these are places I visited. As we move into the 2000s, we're seeing the same kind of storms at the U.S., Japan, and Europe. So the picture has magnified, as it were, and hit insured populations. But I've been to Mozambique, lived in Mozambique, and seen the aftermath of these extreme events. they leave malaria epidemics. Malaria went up fivefold after the 6 weeks of floods in 2000 in Mozambique. In Honduras after Hurricane Mitch, dengue fever, malaria, rodent-borne plague, and other types of viruses that rodents carry, and waterborne disease. So again, it's these clusters that I've observed in developing nations, and now we're seeing this affect us in developed nations.
So have you been trying to involve the insurance industry and various businesses, trying to convince them that they will have to pay consequences if global warming continues unchecked? And is your hope that if you involve them and if they see the consequences, that they'll try to contain global warming, they'll become part of the larger cause?
That's what I've been doing. I've been sitting down with the executive boards of Swiss Re, meeting with Munich Re, AXA Re. These are the reinsurers that insure the insurers, with AIG and large insurers that have now become more aware of the full range of risks of climate change and the biological as well as the physical. The disease and climate change are stalking our health and the natural systems we depend upon. These risks are being perceived in the corporate sector, in both industry and the financial sector. They are now beginning to look for how to develop their investments into healthy, sustainable solutions. This can now turn around and help us towards how we get away from fossil fuels, how we do not go down the nuclear path, I would say, and replace carbon pollution with radioactive pollution. These are the discussions we have to have now as to how public health can be front and center in terms of the new path of development.
Is it ever frustrating for you to, instead of working with patients, to be working with, you know, business and insurance companies, trying to convince them that they need to get on board and make changes, you know, and support changes that will help prevent the further global warming trend?
Working with the business community right now is exhilarating, and all of finance and the corporate sector are buzzing right now. We see venture capitalists putting money into this. The raters like Standard & Poor's begin to evaluate it. So I'm excited with this new patient. And I think that it's if one would do a PET scan on the brain of the global economy, it's all buzzing, the different parts of it, and it's getting ready to make some moves. It needs the enabling incentives and regulations to make the move at a scale that's commensurate with the pace and magnitude of climate change.
Have you succumbed to any of the health problems that you've talked about that you think are connected to global warming? More allergy problems, asthma, problems with mold, that kind of stuff? Not malaria, I hope.
Well, I've had some of these things, but the other day I got poison ivy cleaning in my backyard and fighting back this enormous regrowth of poison ivy and the toxicity, and I was suited up as if I was fighting Ebola.
Wearing a hazmat suit.
It was totally with stripes and strips of and so on. And then decontamination was a horrible problem. I had to get rid of this stuff and put it into. So it made me really think about fighting Ebola and getting rid of that waste. It made me think about nuclear and getting rid of that waste. So I got some poison ivy, if you must know, and this I realized that a roll in the hay, if you're thinking of a roll in the hay these days, you've got to think of more than a condom.
Well, Dr. Epstein, thank you so much for talking with us.
Thank you, Terry.
Dr. Paul Epstein is the Associate Director of the Center for Health and the Global Environment at Harvard Medical School. Coming up, rock critic Ken Tucker reviews Jolie Holland's new CD, Springtime Can Kill You. This is Fresh Air.